From The Conversation, this is Politics with Michelle Grattan, a podcast where Michelle discusses the issues of the day with The Conversation's politics team.
Hi, my name's Amanda Dunn. I'm the politics and society editor for The Conversation, and I'm speaking with Michelle Grattan. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Amanda.
Michelle, last weekend the government announced it would build a nuclear submarine base, and it's narrowed down the list of potential sites to three, with Port Kembla in New South Wales the current favourite. How significant is this announcement and how might it play into the election, do you think?
Obviously, it is significant. There's been talk of an East Coast base for quite a long time, but the actual timing of this announcement coming close to the election, feeding into the Prime Minister's national security narrative, is obviously politically oriented as well as a matter of big policy substance. There's some criticism of it on the political lines. The opposition's been careful. It's saying we haven't been briefed. This is an announcement about an announcement, because of course we won't know for some time, till a long time after the election, which site has been chosen. But crossbencher Rex Patrick from the Senate has been even more forthright, saying this is very political, and noting that when the Navy did a study in 2011, it didn't recommend any of the sites which are now in consideration. It in fact said that Sydney was the best site. Now, back in those days, we weren't thinking of nuclear powered submarines, or at least not thinking of acquiring them, but nevertheless, so it's interesting that Sydney's not in consideration. That would, of course, be, I think, more controversial, and the government would want to steer clear of that.
The government is obviously going hard on this national security agenda, and it obviously thinks it's a vote winner for it. Do you think they're right?
Look, I think it's a bit early to tell. So far, we're not seeing evidence that it's favouring the government, but I think that the Labor Party would still be concerned that it could later on swing things a bit the government's way. And it also, of course, crowds out the opposition's opportunity to talk about other things. The Labor Party's been very, very careful to stick to a bipartisan attitude on national security. But nevertheless, it does need time, particularly to get Anthony Albanese, better known in the electorate, to project an image of leadership around him. And while the talk is more about national security, and of course, while other issues like the floods, which are so terrible, is really taking all the attention, then it becomes harder for Labor to play to the issues that it wants to promote.
Okay, and just on that, Michelle, I mean, we're now 2 months away from the federal election, because it has to be held by the end of May. And while the polls have Labor ahead, how do you read the mood of the electorate? And do you think there's a case perhaps of not particularly warming to either major party at this moment?
I think the electorate is quite jaded after the couple of years of COVID, and in general is not wanting hyper-partisanship. And I think there's a mood for change. There's a mood that people are really over the Prime Minister. But nevertheless, I think there's still some apprehension about change, and there's still some feeling about Anthony Albanese that people really haven't got a grip on him yet. It's interesting that in the Essential poll, which came out today, there was a question which asked about whether it was someone else's turn to govern, and nearly half the respondents said that it was indeed someone else's turn. And the feeling was strongest among younger people. 56% of those under 35 were inclined to be ready for change, but only 4 in 10 of the over 55s. So there's a difference in the electorate, but there is a general feeling that maybe it's time, but it's very different from the it's time sentiment, for example, that put Gough Whitlam into power. It's much more tentative feeling, and certainly Labor won't be feeling at all complacent about this or even confident about this after what happened at the last election. So it still seems to be a pretty open contest.
Okay, and Michelle, the war in Ukraine shows no sign of abating at this point. How, if at all, will this play into the election? And do we have any sense from the federal government that we might be able to open our doors a little wider to people fleeing the violence?
Well, certainly the war is a backdrop to this debate about national security, and we will hear a lot more from the Prime Minister as time goes on about it. It, of course, was a strong theme in his announcement of the submarine base at the weekend. He's talking about an arc of autocracy, which is Russia and China, and the threats that this brings to the world. He's particularly, of course, focusing on our region as well. He's making the point that he's not arguing that the events in Europe mean that we're facing some early threat from China to Taiwan, but nevertheless that this insecurity is very great. So it does overshadow the whole election battle. In terms of our own response, well, there's been some further tightening of sanctions announced today against those who are promoting disinformation about what's happening in the war. I think we will provide more aid. There will be quite a deal done on the side of refugees. A number of times Scott Morrison's mentioned the Kosovars and that program for bringing people in on temporary visas, and then when things settle down they go home. But of course we don't know how or if things will settle down in Ukraine, so that sort of program does have its complications. But I do think that the government is very anxious to do what it can on the humanitarian side.
Okay, and finally, Michelle, the floods continue to devastate Queensland and parts of New South Wales. There have been a lot of heartbreaking images coming through from those regions. There's also been some criticism that the government hasn't paid enough attention to flood victims. Do you think that's a fair criticism?
It's very hard to know. It's really hard to evaluate whether there have been serious shortcomings that could have been prevented. We know that there have been shortcomings, of course, that emergency services and defence personnel, and the first, of course, is state government responsibility, second, a federal government responsibility. We know that they didn't get to some areas quickly enough. But really the question is whether they could have done better in what have been really so devastating and dramatic circumstances. There's been a lot of feeling expressed that ordinary citizens had to take care of neighbours and in their own community. This would have happened, I think, in any situation, but there will be a post-mortem on the performances of the various services and authorities, and only then will we be able to make good judgments. Of course, as we speak, Sydney is experiencing now devastating floods, so the crisis continues in various other areas. The cleanup job is underway, and that's massive. The federal government is going out of its way to say, well, we are getting people and have got people on the ground. They're putting out numbers, and they're looking at more flood relief aid. The ministers have been discussing this today. Already money has been announced, but more will come, and it will come quickly. And both the Prime Minister and the opposition leader will be inspecting flood areas in the next couple of days.
All right, Michelle, terrific to talk with you as always. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Amanda.
Our theme music is by Blue Dot Sessions. You can find more podcasts from The Conversation on our website at theconversation.com.